Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on this Monday morning, last day of January 2022, January the 31st. 19 minutes past the hour. Got a little bit of a late start this morning, but lots of news going on when it comes to the weather that we will have to keep our eye on as the week goes on. And before we get to our guest this morning, and it's going to be a big morning here, I would be remiss if I did not say the big win over the weekend that I think everybody in Ohio is happy. Let's just put it that way, that the Bengals will be going to the Super Bowl, the Cincinnati Bengals. Who would have thought? Who would have thunk? I would have said that a month ago. So congratulations to all the Bengals fans out there. Now, this morning is a very important morning here on the show, and really a morning that could help save your life. In hour number two this morning, we're going to be joined by a longtime visitor to this program, a regular, former doctor on the Today Show in Good Morning America, best-selling author Dr. Art Uihlein will be along this morning to talk about the pandemic and cancer research and how it has changed, as well as treatment, in the last 50 years. And here in hour number one, I can't wait to get to our guest because I got a new book last week, How to Overcome the Most Common Health Challenges Facing African Americans, Black Health Matters, The Vital Facts You Must Know to Protect Your Health and That of Your Loved Ones. Richard W. Walker Jr., MD, is the author, and it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Walker to the microphones for the first time. Dr. Walker, how are you?
Well, good morning, Scott, and good morning, everyone in Ohio. Congratulations on a great win yesterday. I hope everyone in Ohio know that you heard my voice from here in Houston, rooting for the Bengals.
You know, it was a big win. I have not seen this much excitement in Ohio football in a long time.
Well, it certainly was an exciting game, and you know, with so many attempts with the Bengals trying to cross that finish line of getting into the playoffs and then going all the way, it was certainly exciting, and I was as much a Bengals and an Ohio fan, even though I must say I did go to the University of Michigan.
Dr. Walker, this book of yours is absolutely fascinating, Black Health Matters. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a friend of mine who's a nurse, who's Caucasian, doing the all the outrage over George Floyd. She called me, and she was hearing the chant, "Black Lives Matter," and she just said, you know, it just struck her that if we just change that title a little bit, or that mantra that everyone was using, and start saying Black Health Matters, that should be a book that needs to be written to reach out to the population, not only the African-American population, but all populations, to understand what is going on in black health. And the reason why that's important, a lot of people who are not African-American might say, well, how does that affect me because I'm not African-American? Well, understand this. If the sickest subpopulation in America is African-American, and I can assist us in understanding what diseases are and how to mitigate diseases and get control over them, if that happens for those who are the sickest, what can it do for those who are not quite as ill? It will do the same thing and even more. So the book is written to really give African Americans the wherewithal to be in control of their own health rather than waiting for the health care system to do what it hasn't done in 400 years.
You know, this is the big question, Dr. Walker. When people say, well, what is the difference between a Caucasian person and an African-American black person when it comes to their health, what is the difference?
Well, that question is a huge question, and it has so many different layers to it. Obviously, I won't be able to go over all of them, but just a few. We have to first start where we entered into this country 400 years ago and understand what was the mindset of the country, of the population, when slavery began and continued. The mindset was that we were not worthy of getting health care or seeing a doctor. We were property. And as such, the only time that we were allowed to go see a doctor was when the property was at risk of losing its value. And only then did that property have the opportunity to go see someone to take care of the health matters. And therefore, that mindset, that behavior continued. Now, it must be said and be honest, so much positive, so many good things have occurred, but not enough. We still die earlier by at least 5 to 7 years. We get diseases earlier from childhood. The diseases that we get are far more severe, and they cost us more. There's less opportunity for us to get the kind of health care that we need. There's less access. There's less money that is spent in the community for the kind of needs that we have. And then one of the really big components that affects everyone is the lack of the wherewithal of the country to recognize the social determinants of health that affects everyone, but even more so for those who are in the underserved community. And what that means is the social determinants of health, studies have shown that is 80% of your wellness. Our country spends $4.1 trillion on the 20%. This is for everyone. And 80% of what makes us ill are the social determinants. Now, how much money is spent on that? Almost nothing. And it's just, right now, it's a conversation piece. But that component is the greatest component that affects African Americans as to why we are sicker than the general population.
Now, what would be some of the social determinants?
You can take, there's a thing called food deserts, for example. And food deserts are communities in our society where there is no good supermarket, if you will, or a food distribution center within a mile. If you go into where I grew up in Spanish Harlem, what you have is, for the most part, bodegas or small corner stores or neighborhood stores, and they don't sell the highest quality foods. They sell foods that are overpriced, more toxic, with more pesticides and toxic chemicals. Additional things in the social determinants of health are your job. Everyone knows that, for the most part, African Americans in a community make less. We have jobs that are more likely to let us go if there's a challenge with the economics in our society. And most of those jobs do not have health care components to their human resources department. You can also look at the education. Education is another major determinant that says, well, you won't get the best education, therefore that prevents you from getting the best jobs, and I can go on and on. So the social determinants of health are all of those components that we live with on a daily basis that has nothing to do with a hospital, a doctor, And so it is your life, your entire life, outside of the medical component.
One of the subtitles of the book, Black Health Matters, is how to overcome the most common health challenges facing African Americans. How do we overcome that?
Well, the single most important thing about the book is empowerment. And where we are today in the African American community, and if you look when we saw COVID, when COVID hit, what happened was that we also saw the senior population was in the exact same position as the African American population, the Latino or the Native American population. And so what the purpose of the book was to empower people with knowledge. Once you have knowledge about what's going on with the disease, you don't have to be totally dependent upon the healthcare model. Now, the essence of the book is to educate people about specific diseases that are the most common diseases in the community, in a population that causes disease. And we can start off with the single greatest problem, especially in the African-American community, and that is overweight and obesity. Now, why do I start with that as opposed to heart disease or hypertension and so on? Because overweight and obesity are the gateway to disease. When you have overweight and obesity, which is more accepted as the norm in the African-American community, especially for African-American women, 67% of African-American women are in that category, overweight and or obese. And what that does is that is a setup for all the other diseases, hypertension and type 2 diabetes, renal failure, coronary artery disease, heart attacks, et cetera, et cetera. That's where it starts. And the significance about that is, what is your nutrition like? In the African American community, and perhaps in other communities, one of the things that we have to do is look back and ask the question, why do we eat the way we do? And that is because coming out of slavery, the foods that we ate were the foods that kept us alive. Not knowing or caring about whether those foods were foods that were prone to disease. And today, in today's world, we call it soul food. And soul food, the way it was prepared originally, is highly toxic. Too much fat, too much salt, too much sugar. All of these things were back in the day when it was absolutely necessary to keep you alive, were the ingredients that allowed you to get through a 14, 16-hour day in the blazing heat, in the blazing sun with no relief, and it was a food that sustained you. Well, you come down 400 years, we're still eating that kind of food, and that kind of food is now being joined by fast foods. The fast foods are the kinds of foods that we should not be eating. The soul foods are not the, are the foods that we should not be eating, and all of those contribute to disease on a large scale. So the purpose of the book was, here is knowledge about why you have to change what you do. And by the way, you're in control of this. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to wait for a doctor. You don't have to wait for this or that. You are in control. And now you can't point a finger and say, it was the healthcare model, it was the white man, it was society. No, you are now responsible for your own, because you have the information in your hands.
Dr. Walker, now you were talking about an African-American woman in that position. Now, if you are a Caucasian man and you weigh 400 pounds and you eat fast food, would you be subject to the same problems?
Absolutely. It is absolutely the same situation. The only difference is the numbers of people who are Caucasian and don't have that problem. Far fewer, okay? So when I said 67% of African-American women, that's a huge number. I mean, that is the majority of our society. And then what happens with that, in African-American women, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, and this what I'm about to talk about right now, is a conversation that's almost never had in the African-American community. We never talk about the environment, almost never. And if you think about the environment, most of the time what people are thinking about is speaking about preservation of the kinds of things that go on in our society where we're trying to preserve the environment. That's not what we're really talking about. But what I'm talking about is the African-American community is the most toxic community in the country. There were studies that showed that the petrochemical companies were built around African-American or underserved communities. Why? Because they had cheap labor, and they had labor that would not challenge any of the toxicity that's in the community. So we didn't have the economic wherewithal or the political power in order to say this community or this power plant or this plant, whatever it is causing toxicity to the community. Now, how does that relate to obesity? What most people don't realize is that the toxins, regardless of whether it's from the water, the air, or whatever environment that you're in, the food, those toxins are the warehouse for those toxins in the body is fat. So the fatter you are, or the more fat or adipose tissue that you have in your body, the greater the likelihood that you're going to be toxic. Well, you can't stop there. When African-American women become pregnant, that toxicity exists for the fetus. The African-American woman who is pregnant has the highest fetal loss, or the childbearing loss, 3 to 4 times any other population, and much of that is a part of the toxicity that fetus is experiencing. It has no capability of being in an in utero environment without being poisoned. And so we have the highest prematurity, the highest what's called fetal wastage, that's spontaneous abortions. We have the highest congenital anomalies, or babies that are born with abnormalities. All of that is the highest in African-American children.
You know, Dr. Walker, something that the pandemic has exposed by forcing a lot of people to go to their local physicians, go to the hospital in some cases, go to urgent cares, is that it's left a lot of people saying the nurses, the doctors, the people who are treating them don't have the bedside manner that doctors had years ago, that essentially medicine has become an assembly line for people. Does that impact all people and obviously African Americans as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give you a for instance. I used to be the chief of operations in a community that was Hasidic, very religious Jews. And their experience, once they leave that community, is almost identical to that of African Americans. In other words, it's called implicit bias. That implicit bias extends to anyone who's different than what the expected norm is or what the medical professional in a facility is looking to take care of. Let me take it one step further. Let's say that you're a Caucasian and you are here in Texas, you know, it's big in oil and so on, and you're coming from an oil rig, and you've got your usual jumpsuit on, and you smell of oil, and you're kind of dirty and greasy, and you've got to go to the doctor. You don't get a chance to go home. You're going to be treated differently, and you're going to be treated with less respect than a person who comes in who's nice and clean and you know, has a nice, clean, button-down shirt on. That's implicit bias. But when you talk about it from the standpoint of Native Americans, Latinos, African Americans, and seniors, we must put seniors in the same group. What you're going to get is you're going to get an absolute resistance, even though the healthcare provider may not be overtly aware. You're going to get a resistance to the kinds of care that you should be getting. And what do I mean by that? They will probably offer you medication that is the cheapest, not the best. Okay? And if you don't have insurance, you are less likely to be offered less of the things that you need than someone who has insurance and they know is going to be able to handle the expense of the visit. And we can go on and on. One other thing on this in this point of implicit bias, there was a study done, I believe it was last year, in Florida, where they took a look at the outcomes of African-American babies being treated by those that looked like them and those that did not look like them. The any African-American baby who was born with a health problem and was taken care of by someone that did not look like them, their mortality or their death rate was twice what it was when one of those babies was taken care of by a healthcare professional that looked like them. Mm. That's staggering.
You know, Dr. Walker, and I want to come to cancer here in a second, but because we just passed the 50th anniversary on December 23rd of Nixon's war on cancer. But I want to use it as an example here, because you just talked about obesity and things of that nature, food in the African American community. Now, when somebody is diagnosed with cancer, it's a very serious thing. They come in with statistics, they come in with timetables, they come in with what we think we can do. But if you're diagnosed with diabetes, which can be related to your diet, if you have open heart surgery, which is done pretty routinely now, if you are diagnosed with any kind of heart condition, people don't talk in terms of even if you're giving yourself insulin every day, they don't talk in terms of timetables and how long and how dangerous and stages. So it doesn't seem to be as critical in the doctor's eyes or the patient's eyes, who's not in medicine, as cancer would be. But is it?
Yes. Yes. It is, in the sense that when you look at disease in general, regardless of what subtitle we put on it, it is the same outcome, the same approach. It's the same across the board. Now, there are some recent studies that show that when the social determinants of health are included in the care of populations across the board, regardless of whether you're African American, Latino, Caucasian, if you start to include the social determinants of health in the calculation of care, then the outcome and the types of care are the same. And that's pretty remarkable. In other words, once you start looking at those factors that one lives in and that is contributory to your life overall, and you start to say, we have to understand the community from which this person comes and make that inclusive in terms of the care approach, then you begin to get equity in the types of health care that people receive. And only then do you begin to get equity. Without doing that, there is no equity in health care. We talk about it all the time. The thing that bothers me, that is so problematic for me, is that in the medical schools and the nursing schools, they know all this information. But what they don't do with subsequent classes, the new classes, the new students, they don't teach this. They don't teach about what equity is. They don't teach about population health. And I must say that population health is a relatively new understanding, and as is the social determinants of health. But they knew this. And if that's the case, if you know this, why didn't you, or why aren't you teaching every new class of students about these factors so that there is a equity in the kinds of care that people receive throughout our country?
You know, Dr. Walker, something that has fascinated me, and it ties into the obesity and social determinants that you're talking about here. I know people who will get diagnosed diabetic, and maybe they have to take an insulin shot. And they take the insulin shot, and then they have chocolate milk, and they go to a fast food chain, and they do whatever. And they act like, well, this is the medicine that's going to offset that, and I'm going to be okay. And that's, you know, these are not doctors, these are patients, but that's the mindset they leave their doctor with. And even when they see their doctor on a regular basis, of course the doctor says, you have to stop this, but it's never critical. It's never, you're going to drop here if you don't fix this.
Yeah, well, you know, in just that small scenario, you've covered so many things that I address in the book. And the reason, again, why I wrote the book, it is to empower the reader. You have to be empowered with knowledge. I can't tell you how many patients I would have where I would say exactly what you just said. Listen, don't you understand that you have type 2 diabetes? Don't you understand that you have hypertension? I would say the common denominator in all people who have many of the chronic diseases that affect them is that, and you know, I may get blasted for this, but, you know, we're talking truth here, okay? People are very selfish. They think the disease is about them. And I have to remind them, this disease is not about you. This disease is about all the people who love you, all the people who are in your universe, all the people who depend upon you, all the people, regardless of whether it's in the family or the workplace or your kids, they depend upon you being responsible to take good care of yourself. Because if you go, or if you have an amputation, or if you go blind, or you have renal failure and you're on dialysis, it destroys the entire fabric of everything you do. It's not about you. It's about all those people where you are the cornerstone of that family unit, that interaction amongst human beings where we need one another, and too often we forget about that. We forget that we are dependent upon one another for the existence of our life, be it good or bad. We need someone else. We are social beings, and we can't lose sight of that. So when I have a patient who comes in and they haven't taken their hypertension medication, I become Sergeant Walker. My whole disposition changes. Leave the nice guy in the back office. There's another guy that showed up to take care of him, and it's like, who is this person? Well, I'm the guy who's going to tell you straight that what you are doing is selfish, and you are not giving consideration to those people who love you, who have to, if you have a stroke and you can't get to the bathroom, they have to clean you up. Don't you understand that? And so I take a completely different attitude. The inner me, or that side of me that I don't like people to see, it comes out. But the truth is, people really should understand, and it doesn't matter what your race is or your ethnicity or your color or your origin. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The thing is, you must understand that this is about everyone in your universe.
We're chatting with Dr. Richard W. Walker, Jr. The book is Black Health Matters. You can get this, and it's very, very important. You know, Dr. Walker, I wanted to come to this point before we go to cancer. One of the things that I have heard doctors say is that there is a denial among all people that I will never leave this earth. I will not die. And at the end of all illness that is not short-term, like the common cold, that even with the pandemic, and a doctor told me the pandemic has really exposed this, people don't think it will kill you, that if you get it, it's fine and life will go on. If you'd never believe that you're going to depart, if you never believe, fully wrap your mind around that, then why do anything to help your health while you're here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's the same mindset of what I was just talking about, of people who they dismiss the seriousness of their condition. And it doesn't matter what the title is. You started off this segment about talking about cancer. Well, it's the same thing. And why do people do what they do in order to promote or propagate the disease? Is because of what you just said. There's a certain amount of denial, and that denial begins to wax and wane as we get older. But as you know, we have this holier than thou attitude when we're younger. That's not happening to me. When you start hitting in the 50s and the 60s, the reality of your mortality begins to show up. But as we are younger, we generally believe it's going to happen to the other guy. It's not going to happen to me. And that is a false understanding. It's denial. And I'm not sure where that comes from, because it's in all populations. It's in all groups that people think somebody else but not me. And, it is very destructive, because that is the behavior that leads to so much disease. One of the things that people don't really realize and it relates to cancer as well, is that obesity, which is a major health problem in our country, is contributory towards cancer. And why is that the case? Excuse me. That's the case because when you are obese, the most of the problem from obesity occurs with the fat that's on the abdomen. It's called truncal obesity. Technically, we call it white fat. That fat is metabolically active. In other words, it's not just fat that sits there. It's fat that does things and is always active. And that fat is a major contributor to cancers. Now, the reason why I bring this up is that if people understood this, they would be more likely to take care of themselves and to try and keep themselves relatively healthy by eating nutritiously. And it's important that they control the amount of adipose fat, that truncal fat, so that they can mitigate the kind of cancers that occur.
Dr. Walker, to our last point, is it sometimes a blessing? I mean, nobody wants to get ill in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. But if you do happen to get ill in that time frame, you will have tests and you will go through things that you normally would not go through at that age. And your body may be able to tolerate it better than if you were 60 or 70. Then by the time you get to be 60 or 70, if you're lucky enough to do that, you have had tests, you know baselines, and you are aware of things. Is that a correct statement to make?
Yes, but the thing is that people really need to know what test. And the reason why I say that is that more often than not, it is assumed that the doctor is going to order the right tests for you that gives you the actionable knowledge that you need. Now, that's a key word, actionable knowledge. And the reason why I say that is that, you know, as clinicians, we'll order tests in order to get information about what's going on in your body. But as a recipient, as a patient, do you understand what that test is about? Do you have a clear appreciation of what the test is saying in terms of your long-term health? For the most part, the answer is no. Now, why is that? Because when you go to the doctor's office, do you really think that the doctor is going to spend time in explaining each test to you and what the significance is? The answer is no. And the reason why it's no is because there's a time factor here. And that time factor is that does that doctor or nurse practitioner have the time to explain what the test really means and the test that you need? I'll give you an example. A lot of times, if you're a diabetic, a type 2 diabetic, and let me make a distinction, there's a type 1, which is a genetic disease. Type 1 diabetes, that's genetic. Type 2 is environmental. Now, when you have type 2 diabetes, the question is your body making enough insulin in order for you to understand what the course of your disease is going to be like? And the reason why I mention that is a lot of times docs will not order the tests that you need to know to determine whether your body is making enough insulin. If your body is making enough insulin, then you have the opportunity to mitigate your type 2 diabetes. In other words, let me use another word. you have the opportunity to have that diabetes resolved, that type 2 diabetes resolved. And a lot of people don't know that type 2 diabetes, if you catch it early enough, it will resolve. It will go away, and you will no longer be a type 2 diabetic. Well, how do you do that? You got to increase your muscle mass, and you have to decrease the amount of fat that's on your abdomen. If you do those two things, and those come by exercise and nutrition, then you can cause your type 2 diabetes to go away. Now, people don't know that, and the doctors don't explain it. Nor do they order the tests so that you can understand.
Doctor, if you are not a doctor and don't have any medical people in your family, and you try to go on the internet and look this up, which a lot of times can be very bad, just like any other information on the internet, how do you know how to do that?
That's the whole question as to why I wrote the book. Because in order to try and find out what I just said and research that on the internet, you have to know, first of all, that type 2 diabetes is curable. If you don't know that, you won't know where to look or to start your search. So the point, again, here is the point of the book. The point of the book was, here's the information. You don't have to research it. What you got to do is you got to read the book. And if you read the book, there's all kind of references. I go through all kinds of lab tests, various kinds of nutrients and supplements and all the things that you can do so that you have that information at your disposal regardless of what your race or your ethnicity is or your age or your health condition at the time. You have that information, and it's here. You can dissect it for yourself. You can read it for yourself at your leisure and educate yourself so that you are not subject to the kinds of problems that people are experiencing today out of ignorance.
Dr. Walker, much like the Black Lives Matter movement, does the Black Health Matters title and subject of this book, have you had any backlash just because of that?
No, none whatsoever. As a matter of fact, it's really just been the opposite. It's been well received. People are, when they read it, when I do interviews, I am so thrilled that people understand and receive the book for the reason why it was written. And so I am very encouraged that it didn't take on a political side. And in the book, I do mention George Floyd, but I don't go into the Black Lives Matter at all, because that's not what it's about.
Dr. Walker, we've got about 2 minutes left here, and I just said I wanted to address the cancer issue because of the 50th anniversary of the War on Cancer just passing in December. But basically here in 2 minutes, and it's a lot to cover, but are treatments getting better for African Americans and for all people in general in the last 10 years? Are these breakthroughs happening? And if you are somebody who has already been diagnosed listening to this program with diabetes, with heart disease, with cancer, with any of these illnesses, can you do anything from that point on?
Well, the answer to the first part of your question about cancer, the kind of breakthroughs that are happening are simply amazing. You know, we still use chemotherapy, which is poisoning the entire body to kill the cancer. We still use that, but we're using that less and less. We are now using immunotherapy and targeted therapy and nanotherapy. All of these are new scientific approaches to specifically attack the cancers based upon what their genetic information provides us. And so it's no longer kill, make the entire body sick, but we can target certain cancers in certain cells and specifically go after them. And so the same thing is beginning to happen throughout all of medicine. Medicine is getting more and more sophisticated in the technology being used so that we can identify, isolate, and treat the specific conditions that would cause disease. Now, with all of that said, we still have to come back to the individual who has the disease. You have to become more aware of who you are, the importance of your life, and not dismiss the fact that you are a major contributor to your own health and your own future, and therefore don't put it aside. Do something about it and do it proactively today.
Black Health Matters. The author is Richard W. Walker, Jr. Dr. Walker, this has been a fascinating conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on, and I hope maybe you can come back in the future because I think we just scratched the surface with a lot of these issues.
Absolutely. Scott, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. And everyone in Ohio, again, congratulations on the Cincinnati Bengals.
Stay well, doctor.
Thank you, sir. You too.
Bye-bye. All right. Very interesting conversation, and the medical conversation continues next hour with our buddy, Dr. Art Ulin. Don't go anywhere.
.com, Facebook page, at Williams Grass Cutters, email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.